Welcome back to Footwork, a podcast for those who dream big, never settle, and make their own path. I'm Sean.
And I'm Dylan. Together with guests, we share stories and tips every Monday to educate, inspire, and create a community built of soccer players and dream chasers.
Better to have a short life that is full of what you like doing than a long life spent in a miserable way.
Welcome to Footwork. Juan Gomez, welcome to Footwork.
Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. So we always start the same way. Make your own path. That's the motto here. And as someone who's truly followed the dream in an uncommon way, what does make your own path mean to you?
I would say kind of what it is. I guess it's a cliche answer, but you know, if you kind of just focus on your own steps, I feel like football is a game where, you know, you can't really compare yourself to other people. You know, you kind of just have to, you know, do your own thing and take your own steps. Even if you take one step backwards, you know, you see so many examples of people who then take 2-3 steps forward. So making your own path is kind of like, I would say, don't worry about what others do. If you take it day by day, then anything is possible. That's all I would say. I hope that's a good answer. I don't know. I didn't really think about that
one. All answers are good answers.
All answers are good answers. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And diving a glimpse into your career thus far, who are you, where were you, and where are you going?
Well, my name is Johan Gomez. I'm 22 years old, Mexican-American, playing here in the second tier of the German Bundesliga for Eintracht Braunschweig. I've been around some different countries. not in that kind of way, but I've been around. I started my career at FC Dallas through all the youth since I was 12, so about 18, right when I turned 18. I traveled in Europe. Got a chance with FC Porto, played there 2 years with the U19s and with the B team. And that helped me a lot to develop. And then I actually then went to the German third tier for a team called FSV Zwickau. Played there 2 years. And now this is my first year in the second tier with, like I said, Eintracht Braunschweig. And where am I going? Yeah, I don't know. Only God knows, but hopefully, to the very top. Hopefully to the very top.
I thought you were just going to say like up, like just like one word, like where am I going? Up.
You know, that would have been tough, but I did.
That would have been tough. That would have been tough. Fair enough. Coming back to your first answer on the make your own path, I mean, I think the comparison thing is such a tough thing in our sphere, in this world of playing football, because, I mean, obviously with social media, it's so easy to see how people are doing, and people are always doing, they're only doing well on social media. So, I mean, Has it been easy for you to kind of stay in that regard? And maybe when you're going through a tough stretch of playing, or, you know, I know there was probably some tough times during the relegation battles in Zwickau. Is it easy for you, or do you kind of have to find that balance in terms of stay present and stay on your mission?
It's definitely not easy. And it's something I'm even kind of thinking about and dealing with right now. You know, even though I've been playing a lot, you know, I'm very hard on myself. So, you know, you kind of always think about, you know, am I playing good? You know, am I not playing good? I see, you know, my competition is playing good. You know, I got to play better. And then you think about all these things. And I find that when you get in your head, more is more difficult to play well. You kind of just have to forget about that kind of stuff. So I definitely wouldn't say it's easy. I definitely still deal with kind of, not the comparison, but just kind of focusing on yourself. You know, if you know, you get on Twitter nowadays, and even if you're not following certain accounts, you'll see stuff, especially with algorithms and stuff like that. Like, stuff will pop up about your team or about the national team or XYZ player or whatever, and then you're kind of just like, you know, he's doing this and whatnot, and then they make him out to seem like the best player in the world or something like that. Yeah. So I think it's definitely something where you just kind of got to stay in your own lane, you know, just like I said with the first answer, kind of just focus on yourself, not compare yourself too much, but challenge yourself. It's kind of like a me versus me mentality.
Yeah. It can also be tough too, like when things are going so well and you're checking Twitter and you're seeing the praise and seeing the hype, that could also obviously has a different effect, but it can also be kind of detrimental in the fact that you, I don't know, maybe it takes you out of it and takes you out of the work that you're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I wouldn't say I've been a superstar by any means, but you know, when something goes well, or when you score a goal or whatever, or get a call up or whatever it may be, you know, people will message you or you'll get tagged and stuff and all this and that and the other. But I'll give credit to my dad there, actually. He, anytime something like that happens, you know, my dad's always been very hard on us, me and my brother. And, you know, one of the first things he always tells us, we have a family group chat, is when something good happens for us, you know, be like, all right, you know, don't be on social media too much. Don't get caught up all, you know, in it. There's still stuff to work on. And so I'll definitely give him credit. I actually don't know when I score a goal or something like that. You know, I kind of stay off my phone because I find it to be a little bit too much. It's very easy to get lost in that stuff and think, yeah, I had a great game, or I did this, or I did that. So I would say I'm better at staying away from the praise than I am at, like, you know, dealing with the negative stuff. Gotcha. But, you know, it's a balance.
For sure.
The balance, work in progress. And now your jump into the second Bundesliga after playing two seasons at Zwickau in the third, which Dylan and I believe is the best league in the world.
Second Bundesliga is the best league in the world.
Second Bundesliga is the best league in the world. It is. What stood out to you right away when you made the jump to the second?
Within my team, or just like within the playing other teams?
Both personal and as a team.
So I remember, I think it was my second day of training, our captain, you know, not all the new signings were there. Some guys were still on vacation or whatever it may be. But it was raining, and I was the first signing. I wouldn't say I was like a big signing, but when you're the first signing, you know, it's kind of like I'm still relatively young, and it was still kind of a big deal. So they knew where I came from. They, you know, knew my stats and everything. And I get the ball in training, and I wasn't at the pace of it yet. Like, I was taking my time a little bit too long. And I remember my, like, second day, or first day on the ball, second day of preseason, the captain, like, pulls me aside after the session. I wouldn't even say I did bad by any means, but he was like, you know, this isn't the third league, you know, you got to play faster, this, that, and the other. And so that stood out to me. And then when playing other teams, like you guys said, I mean, I don't think the second Bundesliga gets the credit it deserves. I mean, I wouldn't say, I'm biased, obviously, but when you add the aspect of like how many historic teams are in here and their fan bases and, you know, the culture behind every game, you know, that definitely adds a level of pressure and kind of, you know, even if it's not maybe the Premier League where the best players are playing, you know, there's still like that level of every game is amplified, you know, and that can affect games as well. And so that's probably one thing I noticed. I remember the first home game, or the first game of the year, which is a home game, just playing in front of, you know, even our stadium is one of the smaller stadiums in the second league, and it was still like 21,000 or something like that. And you just hear how loud it gets. It's crazy. You know, I don't know if you get used to it, but it's still kind of like, you remember like running out for the warm up and you hear that like the whole curve, and it's just like, you just get goosebumps. So it's pretty, that's different to the third league. You know, the third league, they're not pulling that many supporters. So that would be the main difference, I would say.
Is there one stadium that, besides obviously the home fans and stuff, but is there one away stadium that stood out to you like, holy shit?
Schalke, probably. We played there like a couple weeks ago. We lost 1-0, which we shouldn't have, because they're actually in a relegation battle with us. Yeah. We had come off of 3-4 straight wins, and then we played them, and they were in shambles at that time, and we lost 1-0. But I remember, because my girlfriend and my parents, and my, you know, people asked me, like, what is it like to play? I think it was like 65,000 people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, you don't really notice when you're playing, but when you get scored on, it's like, it explodes.
Amplifies, just, yeah.
You're just standing there and it's just like sound all around you. And they're playing the goal anthem or whatever it is. So you hear the music and you hear the fans, and then you kind of just have to go like get the ball and put it at, you know, the center circle again while they're celebrating. So that's when you really notice like all the people there. But yeah. I'd say Schalke is probably cooler than Hamburg Stadium, because Hamburg is, I think it's around the same size, but Schalke has like a, not a jumbotron, but like, I mean, it is a jumbotron, but when you go up in Dallas, you know, nothing's a jumbotron at AT&T Stadium.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's levels,
it's something
there.
Like that, you know, it's something.
It's a different word.
Yeah, exactly.
There's something about those goal songs, too, that are like humiliating in a way that makes you so angry. Like, I'm sure people who may not know, like, they've probably heard Bayern's one, which is like that kind of clown carnival one. And I feel like everyone has one that's like so annoying. Like, when you get scored out of it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%. You know, it's just kind of like an overwhelming sense of emotion. You know, you're sad, you're angry, and then you just get like this music. It's like, what, you know, what the hell is going on? But
yeah.
I don't know whose idea that was, but
it's stuck in Germany for some reason. They love to I mean, you kind of mentioned it. It has been a strong start to the Rückrunde, the background, or the second part of the season. Some unlucky results of late, but obviously to stay in the league, to be in the second Bundesliga next year would be a fantastic achievement, kind of what you guys, I would assume, are going for right here in this stage. How can you explain this feeling, I guess, this pressure to especially listeners in America of relegation battles and staying in the league and how massive that is for a whole city and club?
It's a lot, honestly. You try not to think about it. And I mean, I'm not really even being dramatic by any means. It's just, it is tough. You know, you feel the pressure of the fans, and you kind of turn off, all the extra sound around you on social media or whatever it may be, you know. My favorite button on social media is like the show less. I'm not interested in this post, or then when something comes up, you know, you kind of try to block that out. But you definitely kind of feel it, and you feel it around you also. And it's very, you know, also when your team is playing well, it's contagious. I'm sure you guys know it's also contagious when your team's playing bad or under pressure. And, you know, when you feel maybe an older player kind of feels a little bit of pressure, he made a mistake. Now it's like, okay, like, am I feeling like, should I have pressure on myself, you know? And then you, maybe if you go down in an important game, like yesterday was an important game, you know, we lost in Nuremberg 2-1. Never should have lost that game, but we lost two set pieces. And you go down 1-0, and you go down 2-0, and you're like, oh, now you're putting pressure on yourself, you know? And can I, you know, should I make this mistake? If I make this mistake, are they going to, like, get a good goal-scoring chance, whatever it may be? So kind of when you're in a relegation battle, it is a lot of extra thinking, I would say. You kind of just have to do your best to turn it off.
Yeah. And I mean, momentum works in both ways too. So obviously positive momentum, like you said, when you're winning, everything's going well, there's jokes. And when you're losing and kind of towards the bottom, I mean, you still, like, when you're out on the field, you'll still see it, but I feel like there's just that level of, I don't know, people are a little bit more angry. They're a little bit more,
less patient,
I guess, on edge. Yeah, just less patient. Yeah. Like everything is like, no, this isn't the time to fuck up. This is the time for focus and everything. Not that it takes all the fun out of it, but it definitely makes it more serious and more like A to B to C.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. You know, and as an attacker, you know, you're going through something where it's like, you know, if I get a half chance, if I get not even a clear chance, if I get a half chance, you know, this is going to, has to really count, you know? And so it's kind of that on the attacking side of things is like where the pressure lies, I would say. For a defender, I'm sure it's different. But you see a team at the middle of the table, you know, they miss an open goal, not literally, but they miss an open goal. They're like, oh, okay, they're kind of like, you know, the next one will come, you know, it doesn't matter as much, but like, it's the end of the world if you miss something like that here, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, you just kind of, even I think just the important thing is kind of like not going against each other within a team. You know, like you said, like tension can be very high. So I think just even fans, like our fans, if we're not playing forward in the game when we have to win, like, and we're kind of just swinging around the back, they'll start whistling at us. You know, that's the kind of thing. You kind of just have to tune even them out and be like, you know, this is us on the field. It's 11 of us and plus the guys on the bench and the training staff and whatever maybe, but this is the team. These are the guys that are fighting, actually on the field fighting. So that's kind of what you have to remember. Cause then if you let the fans get in your head, you start yelling at each other, and then it just
gets you out of your game. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
As an attacking player, do you measure your success on statistics, on goals and assists, or have you been able to kind of see a bigger picture in that?
To be fair, so growing up, I was always a striker. And I was always kind of like playing in a team like FC Dallas. You have a bunch of talented guys around you. You know, you see the Tanner Tessmans, Kevin Bonilla's now at Real Salt Lake, Thomas Roberts, all these guys. And then you're kind of just standing up there as a striker, and you're like, oh, I'm getting a bunch of like clear chances, one-on-ones. Like, oh, I just have to score them. And I was always scoring. And that I would kind of measure my success off the goals. But even growing up, my dad told me, and I've said this before, but he used to tell me that just because you score doesn't mean you played well. And so honestly, I would say ever since I came to Germany, I'm not the tallest, I'm not the strongest. I have been playing in, you know, double striker up top lately, but ever since I was in Spik, I would say I've been mostly playing like as an attacking midfielder. even winger sometimes, but I've kind of played everywhere. But yeah, honestly, it is tough now in today's day and age not to measure your success on goals because everyone else does. Yeah. So it's like, if I said I don't, then I would be lying because everyone else does. So I have to measure it that way also. And so in that sense, you know, this year, I think 2-2, not the best. I've been mostly playing as a midfielder, but even now, like, you know, kind of been going through a drought. I think last 5 or 6, maybe I haven't scored, but it is tough, especially in a relegation battle. You get in the minutes, it's kind of like, you know, like you get in your head a little bit about it. But to, you know, long story short, definitely, I would say in today's day and age, you definitely got to measure success on goals and assists 100%.
Is there something you've learned to get through these dry periods? Extra training, extra finishing, obviously trying not to focus too much on it because then it's kind of working against yourself.
Yeah. So to be honest, I wouldn't say I found something that works for me. You know, it's kind of just something that has to click. And it's just kind of even not something that has to click, but it's almost something like you have to get lucky almost. You have to get that moment of the game, you just have to get the goal. You know, and it's kind of like it's the monkey off your back, you know? Because I find like, yeah, I'll stay and do some extra finishing and stuff, but then I'm like, I'm watching video on like, how did I finish this chance? Or how did this guy finish this chance when the goalie went down or when the goalie did this or did that? And then it's like you're almost overanalyzing it. And I'm like, man, I didn't watch any video in the academy when I was growing up. You know, it's a moment where you have to feel it and you just make the decision to shoot it here, there, or whatever. And now, as you grow up and like you have these resources where you can watch this film or you can analyze this play from different camera angles, it's almost easier to overthink it. And so I think probably what works for me is doing less and just not thinking about it at all.
Yeah. That's a good point, man. I mean, if you break down everything to the smallest minute detail, like there becomes a time where that doesn't help you in a split second decision. That's relying on you and your confidence and your ability to just like be in the moment. And sometimes, like you said, you just need that. Sometimes a ball will just fall to you. Sometimes you create your own chance, but sometimes that ball just falls to you, and sometimes that's all you need.
Exactly. Sometimes it's just, you know, right place, right time.
And let's jump into some of the tactical elements. Being in Germany, they love their tactics. Explain your game and how it's fit into the team this year and kind of things you've learned playing with Braunschweig this year.
Yeah. I've learned a lot, 100%. I think if you ask most people, you know, as far as my development throughout the year, they'd say I've developed a lot. As I said, I think home opener, this was because our left back was injured, so our left winger played left back. So I played left winger, the home opener, second league debut. Thankfully, I haven't played there again. Not to say that I played bad, but kind of just mostly played in the middle of the park as a 10, as a double 8. More to a striker. I haven't played a single striker, but a double striker. And as far as tactics, you know, we've had 2 different coaches this year and 2 very different games. I'd say with the first coach, when I was playing more than 10, that was a 4-2-3-1. You kind of have more space to roam around in the middle. You kind of have, you know, you have 2 sixes behind you, maybe a little bit more freedom to make mistakes, to dribble at guys, this, that, and the other. You know, I would say there's a little bit more freedom there. To now playing up top with 2 and then 2 8s behind you, it's not as much, you know, scan and turn. It's more, you know, you still scan when you check into the space, but at the same time, most of the time you have a big center back right on your back.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, changed completely my style of play. And so now we play more, I'd say now we turn to more, probably one of the best teams in the league in countering. So you win the ball and we have really fast guys and we're countering and we're out of there. So we take a lot of the pressure for most of the game and we kind of just defend compact. And then as soon as he makes a mistake, we're countering. And I think we'll probably have to change that tactic now because teams are planning pretty well for that now and kind of playing it a little bit safer, taking countermeasures. But as far as it's helped my game, it's kind of helped in the aspect where you have to learn different positions and different systems very quickly. Even with the 2 coaches, you know, they try different systems for different games when we play. Maybe a team that has more possession, you know, this kind of shape defensively to then a different shape offensively. And it's kind of just a lot of things you have to process in the moment in the game. So that's what I would say.
And do you feel like, I mean, especially in a counterattack system, do you feel like your run making and your also your ability to break at pace is definitely something that has improved.
Yeah, 100%. So one of my strong suits when I was playing as a striker in the Tennis Academy was my runs. Mm-hmm. But now it's a little bit different because in the Academy I was playing 4-3-3. So you're kind of just running for yourself. Now with two up top, so we play a 5-3-2, you're running for your teammate almost. So when you run, you pull the guy with you, and when he gets pulled, then the other guy runs. And that's kind of how we work. Just like one guy comes in, one guy goes. You know, this guy comes in, I go, or then I go, and then the wing back goes. I come, the wing back goes. So it's kind of more not as much running for yourself. It's more like running for the team, opening spaces, that kind of thing.
And is some of that kind of pre-planned in terms of the sessions and you kind of going through it? Because you see it a lot now with a lot of modern day managers where there is not that there's less freedom, but there's more specific tactics in terms of, I saw someone compared it a little bit more to basketball recently in terms of when he goes there, you go there. Obviously you guys in the game have to play off each other, especially in two forwards. Like you said, if one's dropping and the other one's going, you're making runs off each other. But do you guys work on that as well in training in terms of specific things of when he goes there, I go there?
I can't give you the whole training plan, but I think
on a general, on a general.
Yeah. I think this would be a good question to ask my brother who plays in Spain, because I watch his games and it seems like a lot more vibes. He plays in La Liga too, and it's more reliant on individual quality. And he'll probably tell you they work on tactics, but definitely not to the extent where Germans work on tactics. And I feel like it's not my team that does it specifically, but it's almost like this team reacts to that team because this team knows that this team will pair very, very well tactically.
I see.
So we definitely do. It's always different in the game because you don't know how this player will react. Will he play with more intensity than he did in the last game, or will he play more, you know, more safe? Or so it's kind of always dependent on how a player reacts. But we definitely do kind of, you know, an 11-0, that kind of thing is when you see those things. You put the mannequins down.
Yeah,
you know,
you
like to think this is where this player will stand. And so we kind of just run through it to gain confidence. But obviously you're not playing against anybody, so it's different in the game. You know, when a guy is actually on you, putting pressure, like, can you make the pass? Or can you make the movement to open up the space? But for the most part, I'd say 11-0 is kind of where you try to prepare yourself with the ball offensively for the game.
In this system with the two forwards, is there a defensive setup that you feel more comfortable or like to take advantage more? Is it in terms of if they're playing a 3 or a 5 back or with a 4 back, do you see where is one more favorable to you in terms of like you see how they play and you're like, this is going to engage my game today?
So most of the teams in Germany play a 5 back. So it's definitely different when they play 4 in the back. But also depends. I wouldn't say I think about it too much on how it'll affect my game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in scouting reports, though, they usually put like the speed of the guys that are expected to play and, you know, the height and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of where I say, like, okay, well, I'm going to have to like really be on my game aerially today to win aerial duels, or this guy's not that fast. Maybe I can get him behind him, you know, that kind of thing. But in terms of 4 in the back or 5 in the back, it's more of just how are we going to adjust our pressure. For the most part, we kind of press in the same way, which I think we may change that now because a lot of teams are figuring it out. It used to work pretty well, but now they're kind of they're dropping the third guy back, and they're kind of swinging it back. So it's hard for two guys to come, and the 6 will drop. So they're playing a 4v2 rondo, kind of tiring us out, tiring the guys that are the fastest in the counter game out. And then they take us out of the game when we're counter because, you know, we're just running around after the ball. And so then when we win, it's like they don't have that energy anymore to sprint.
To break, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we'll change it now. But, yeah, as far as how I consider it, I wouldn't say I really think about it in terms of if they play 5 or 4.
The layover hoodie is out now. Select size is still available on our website, footwork.club/shop, or follow any link in our bios. It will be the best hoodie you own. We personally guarantee it.
Speaking on tactic and just the approaches to the game, you mentioned your brothers in the second league in Spain, and you feel it's more based on individual quality. You spent time in Porto with their U19s in the second team. How was the approach to football there different when compared to Germany?
The main thing I always say is when I get asked this question by my teammates or people around the game is they kind of ask me that. And I say the biggest difference to me is in small-sided. So when you play small-sided games in training, in Portugal, it's kind of like it's very fluid. And it's almost like ISO. Like you get the ball from your goalie and it's just like you and a guy, whichever guy might be the forward, whatever. And you kind of just go one-on-one with him. If you beat him, like, no one else is really going to challenge you. You're going to score. It's very free. It's very one-on-one oriented, that kind of thing. In Germany, it's like, I remember when I got this figure out, we played small side. I was like nothing I had ever done before. It's so much running. And you follow your man everywhere. And much switching. Yeah. And you kind of follow this guy. And then you follow that guy. And then when you get tired and your guy scores, then everyone screams at you. So I remember in Portugal, it was a lot more fun playing small sided. But generally, yeah, I would say Portugal is kind of similar to the Spain style of play. You have a lot of guys that are very technical, kind of just have their own ideas with the ball. It's not so tactically oriented. You kind of rely on individual quality, I would say.
Can you walk us through a little bit more about your time there, including the move, how that came about, the seasons, and then ultimately why it came to an end?
Yeah. So I was trialing. So I always said I wanted to trial in Europe before I went to college. I was committed to the University of Portland. I took all five of my official visits. I kind of was enjoying that. And then the summer of 2019, I was 17 going on 18. And I was still going to play my second year of U19. I was going to take a gap year. I got offered a North Texas contract at the time, but it was, you know, very new. I didn't want to take that risk. And so my agent at the time told me that there was clubs interested. I had won National Player of the Year, so there was obviously, you know, some kind of interest abroad. And we had made it to the national championship and lost to NYC. But we made it, and 2 days after, I flew to Germany, and I was on trial with Nuremberg, actually, Stuttgart, Freiburg, and Augsburg. And it went well. Teams are kind of, like, thinking about, well, specifically Freiburg was thinking, I spent, like, 3 weeks there, and they were thinking about if they should offer me or not, And in the meantime, you know, I was out there for like a month already. And as a 17-year-old, you know, coming to out of high school, you kind of want to go back and spend, you know, summer with your friends. And I remember I was like so gassed. And I told my agent, I was like, Stuttgart, it didn't work out. Like 3 days in, they were like, oh, we just had a striker. And I remember kind of being mad at my agent at the time. I was like, why am I here if they just had a striker? And he was like, okay, don't worry about it. I know you want to go home, but just we got a call from Porto. And when you hear that, it's like, you know. He was like, they want to see you.
That's
go
a ring.
Try.
That's a ring.
Yeah, ear. Exactly. Yeah. And I remember I landed and at the airport, like there was a bunch of FC Porto stuff already. And I was like, okay, like, this is real. And I trialed there and exactly the opposite of Stuttgart. Like within 2 days, they told me that they wanted me to sign. And so I signed and they offered me a 2-year contract, one for the U19, one for the B team. And the U19 year was kind of, it was hard, you know, being away from home. I would play a lot as a winger, which I wasn't used to, especially coming off as being a striker all the time. And then COVID hit. And then right before COVID hit, I had broken my foot. So I was out for 3 months from January to March. I come back in March. This is the last game before COVID hit against Braga. I come in, I'm in the first sub. Things are looking good. I'm full of confidence. I just gotten called into USU20 camp in Portugal. In Portugal, actually, and I go in, and like 10 minutes in, I like strain my hamstring and I have to be subbed back out. And so things were looking slim for the Portugal camp, but I don't know if I would say luckily, but COVID. So everything was canceled. And then, you know, I went home, and so U19 year was just kind of like not that many games, was injured a lot of the time. And, you know, and then I go into B team year. Obviously, you know, when you go into B team, you know, they didn't have a big sample size on me. They didn't think they could really rely on me. I hadn't really shown much the year before, but they had me under contract. And so then they're bringing in guys in my position, this, that, and the other. First game, I don't play at all. I'm just on the bench. And then we lost. And that's how quick things go in Porto. It was just one game, but they lost. And immediately second game, they asked me, can you play 8? Because I was running a bunch. And so now I'm going from being a striker to being an 8 in a double 8 and 4-3-3. And I'm like, you know, I'll do anything to play. And so I play and I score my first goal in my first game. And then I win the starter spot for like the whole part of the first round. And then we're struggling though And so that's the thing about playing for a big team. They can bring down the big players. And so at this time, Fabio Vieira is with the first team not playing, so he's coming down. Vitinha is with the first team not playing, he's coming down. Diogo Costa, you know, the Portuguese first team, you know, the Portugal national team keeper, he's not playing, so he's coming down. And it's like, you know, I go from starting all the time to like then being on the bench when the new coach comes in and then not making rosters. And so when you're not making rosters, you know, towards the end of your contract and your contract's running out, it's not usually not a good sign. And so then my agent is like, you know, we don't, because I was like, I want to play nine. And he's like, we don't have any film as a nine. Like, we, you know, no one's going to take a chance on you. We don't have any film as a nine. It's a professional. And I was thinking, but, you know, I had chances. I had opportunities in MLS. Obviously, you know, it's always easier to go back to your home country. I was like, no, I don't want to go back to MLS. You know, I've already like learned out 2 years, COVID years, you know, like let's stick it out. And was getting no opportunities then. He only found out about Stick Out because Joe Enox, actually, a guy you guys had on the pod, because it was an American coach. He was like, you know what, let's just try it here. We knew nothing about Stick Out. He was like, they're down having a trial and they play a 4-4-2. And he said, he'll let you play striker. And I was like, okay, let's go. So off to East Germany we go for a trial. Same kind of thing, like kind of impressed them within the first couple of days. And he offers me, and Joe becomes like a father figure to me. And I'll tell anyone about this. I mean, he's absolutely awesome. You know, I didn't speak a lick of German at the time, so he helps me with all my bank papers. And you guys know about Germany. They love their papers. They love their documents. Man. They flood you with documents, and I have no idea what to do. He gets me registered in the city. Helps me my insurance, all this. And so he does everything for me. And he's like my, you know, can't speak to anyone on the team, but he's my guy. Like, and so all the guys are calling me a son or whatever, but he's just the guy like I could go to, you know? And so I end up signing there. And long story short, I did play as a striker, but I even ended up playing as a six under Joe. So
you played as a six?
I played as a six, right before he got fired. January, February of 2023. So it was a 4-4-2, like I said, but he played with like a back four, like a left midfielder, right midfielder, two strikers, and two midfielders that, I mean, technically you can call them a 6-8, whatever, but he called them sixes. Right. And so I'm playing as a six, and I played everything under him. And I think he'll tell you that's just because, like, he regarded me highly, and, you know, he knew I could kind of, he could count on me anywhere. But yeah. That was kind of my story. I know you kind of just asked me how I got to Porto and my story from there, but
no, that was perfect.
That's a perfect segue.
You know, it's a podcast. It's supposed to go around.
Well, people ask, you know, how did you end up in Sigma from Porto? You know, it's like, you know, how did that happen? But that's the whole story. You know, not
because it is quite the change for people who don't know East Germany. Like, it is.
It's not Porto.
It is kind of a different world.
Exactly. It's definitely not Porto. That's right. That's right, Sean. But it is a different world. But you know what? People couldn't believe, and you know, people thought I was being biased or whatever, but I will firmly stand on the fact that the third league in Germany, I think I took a step forward. Not only, you know, you're playing in front of way more fans, because, you know, the second Portuguese league, you know, it's kind of just like, you know, even the first Portuguese league, you kind of just have the big 3, 4, 5 teams that a lot of people support. It's a small country, obviously. But you're playing in front of way more fans, you know, just more like TV coverage of everything. And I'd say that the third league is a higher level than the second Portuguese league, 100%. And so people were like, oh, man, like, who's this team that he moved to? You know, he's supposed to be playing at Porto. And when I was at Porto, you know, when you play for a team like that, you know, I was getting a lot more media recognition and that kind of thing. Like, you know, why is he going here? And but I'll firmly say that I think it was almost a step forward, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, especially just to bring your game in just in a different level. I mean, it's a totally different style of play. So really just to compliment you as a player to have some of the more technical aspects of a Portuguese league, the one-on-ones, and then also have the Zweikampf and have the physicalness of the German league to kind of bring you into, because I mean, I'm sure even as a, like, you're young making this decision, but I'm sure in your head it was like, how can I be the best player I can become?
Yeah, 100%. I was actually looking for a text I got from someone that I met in Frabbert. It was like sporting director or something of the youth. And my agent at the time was telling me to reach out to him and ask him what he thought about Zwicka. And it, you can kind of tell, I asked a couple people that I knew from Germany, but you could kind of tell that he didn't think that I could do it, kind of, because he was like, it's very physical, like it's a fight, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you really got to fight. It's not that much football. Like, I think a lot of people thought, like, coming from Porto, I wouldn't be able to, like, hack it with all the physicality, and all that stuff. But like you said, it kind of just added another dimension to the game, especially in Germany. It's a lot of physicality and like you said, Fightkämpfe and all that stuff. So I think it was a blessing in disguise for sure.
And what was the reason that, I mean, I think it's a great decision, and Dylan and I would definitely agree with that, is that staying in Europe versus going back to the MLS? Why were you so adamant about not going back?
I've said this a couple of times. I don't think I've ever said this on an interview, but maybe I have in Chum Chat. But, it, you know, when you wake up at like 7 a.m. to go to training in Portuguese time, and you see all your friends in college, you know, posting Snapchats of them partying and stuff like that. You know, I'm not a big party or anything like that by any means, but, you know, just having fun and living the college life or whatever. And then you're getting up for training. It's kind of like, man, it's a sacrifice. Like, it really is. And especially being there during COVID. And the worst part is also, like, I didn't speak Portuguese at the time, obviously, even though it's similar to Spanish, you know, you don't understand immediately. And so, you know, you don't understand what your teammates are saying. And that's kind of, you know, something that you have to deal with mentally. And then being alone in Portugal when you get injured, you know, you can't even do the thing you're there for.
Yeah.
And so putting all that, and then like thinking about the fact that I put up with so much in Portugal, in terms of not making rosters, being injured, you know, not understanding the language, having to do a lot of things by myself, you know, it just kind of made me feel like, you know, I'm not ready to go back to my comfort zone. By no means am I saying MLS is a bad league or it will be a step back. I think it's, you know, it's developed very, very well. It'd be a great league to play in. But for me, it was always a dream to see how far I could go in Europe. I think, like I said, for anyone in the world, if you're German, it's easier to come back to the top three German leagues. If you're Austrian or whatever, it's easier to come back to your home country. So being American, or Mexican-American, you know, you have those options of Liga MX or MLS at any time. And so, you know, more than maybe other leagues. So I thought, you know, I think you can always have that in your back pocket. But, you know, I just kind of wanted to see, like, you know, how far can I grind it out? And that's kind of just been my mentality even now.
How important is it for you to kind of test yourself outside of your comfort zone? Do you find yourself thriving in those situations and kind of sometimes looking for them?
I'd say so. I wouldn't say I look for them. Maybe they
sometimes it could be subconscious though. Like sometimes.
Yeah, maybe it could be. I don't know. I think it's more of just like if I see a challenge, I don't want to back down from it. Like I want to say I at least tried, you know? Yeah. I think the worst thing to have is regret. And so, you know, if you did your best and you absolutely fought every day to make the dream happen, then I think you could be more satisfied with the result if it doesn't happen. But if, you know, you kind of go back and stay in that comfort zone and then you're looking back 20 years from now and you're like, dang, like, what if I had done this, you know, then I think it's the worst feeling to have.
Yeah.
Do you find that your time in Porto, when it was not going well, but then you got over it, you go to Tucau, you did personally well, and now made the next jump, that it's, you're kind of realizing like, okay, this is, like you said, you're not looking for the discomfort, but you're also realizing that your sacrifices you're making are beginning to pay off.
100%. I think, you know, I'm a big believer in God, and, you know, I like to think, by no means do I think I'm arrogant or anything like that. But a lot of football players, as you know, like there's a certain part of us that has to be arrogant. You have to want the ball. You have to want to score. You have to want to win. You have to believe in yourself. So you have a level of arrogance as a football player, as an athlete. Maybe that's why girls a lot of times don't want to deal with athletes, because you have to have that level of arrogance or confidence. But I always think God kind of put me in a situation where he humbled me very early on in my career. I think if things had gone very well at Porto, when I scored the first goal on my debut in Porto B, I mean, I thought it was amazing. I was training with the first team. There were, I was in the newspaper all the time. I'm like, oh, could he be like the next thing at Porto, like all this stuff. And it's easy to get to your head. And I think, you know, when you get humbled at the level that I got humbled at, and now you're in East Germany and you're not speaking the language and you're like, and it all happened in the, you know, the blink of an eye, then it's kind of like you realize that anything can happen in football, like any given day, from week to week. So you kind of learn to be humble and kind of just take it, like, you know, like I said, day by day, step by step. That's the main thing I said I would take away from kind of where I've gone so far.
And it's important too in this career, in this lifestyle, to have those trialing moments that show you, especially when you get through them, to show you I've done this and I can do this again if this were to ever come up again.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's, like you said, I think it's important to be able to get through those moments. Yeah. I'm sure you guys know. I mean, having, you know, y'all's girlfriends there, I don't know if you guys want that in the video, but having y'all's girlfriends there, I'm sure can help, you know, having someone there, especially when you're dealing with stuff alone. You know, a lot of people, you know, you don't talk about, you know, mental health and that kind of stuff for athletes, because you kind of think a lot of people think they're superheroes or it doesn't affect them. But, yeah, you know, having to deal with some of that stuff on your own definitely sucks. So it's good to have kind of a support system.
And talking about those a little bit more into this transition, especially like we talked about this, this balance between humbleness and, I guess, arrogance or confidence. Do you feel like that, because we spoke with Joe Enox, like we said, and he said a lot of the times he feels American players have difficulty in the beginning, but he actually did signal you out as being one who he thought was good in finding a rhythm. Do you feel like that there was a balance for you between confidence to show like I'm the best player when I step out on the pitch, but also the humbleness to learn and to accept that you have to learn each and every day to become a better player there?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. Actually, it's a really good question. And I was, it's funny because I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I was kind of thinking about my journey in Spico, and the whole time I was there, you know, I hope my teammates see this, you know, they don't take this the wrong way if they see this, but every day I stepped out, I was like, I'm the best player here. 100%. To be fair, I know most of my teammates thought that as well, so that helps because they told me that. But also, being in an East German place where I was the youngest player, you have a bunch of guys who played in second, third league forever. They know how to humble you very quickly. So if you're making a mistake, you know, even if I think I'm the best, I can't act like I'm the best because they're going to humble me very quickly and they're going to remind me that I'm, you know, under them. And in Germany, as you guys know, there's a big hierarchy. So the older players don't have to do anything. The younger players have to take the balls. You have to fill up the water. Yeah. You have to do all this. Yeah. So, I mean, if I'm the best player, I could be messy on the pitch, but I'm still the water boy to these guys. Yeah. So that kind of also helps a balance for sure. And I remember, speaking of Joe, I was thinking about this actually for some reason, like the other night too. It just came to my head. So we were playing some kind of thing where you had to like make the final pass, and Joe hates it. I mean, he's become German. He hates it when you like scoop the ball up in the air. And so as my pass, I scoop the ball behind like the back line. Like I scoop it and as my final pass, and he goes, stop. And Joe doesn't yell or anything or curse really that much. He's very chill. And he goes, I don't know what they had you doing in Portugal. We don't do that shit here. And like in front of everyone, like just yelling at me. And I'm like, now what did I do wrong? I swear it was a good pass. And yeah, that, so kind of having that, like him and other leaders on the team kind of remind me every day that I wasn't the best or I have a lot to learn, definitely helped.
Funny you say that he's become German, because before we started our podcast episode, he goes, oh, my English is not so good anymore. We're like, oh, come on, man. It definitely is fine.
Dude, he has said that a couple times. I remember a specific time. It does make sense, though. Like, even just now, I was going to say goal anthem, and I said Tola, him, you know, whatever. Like, that's, mm-hmm. you know, it triggers in your head. I've lived here 3 years. He lived here 30 or something. But I think we were in his office, and he was telling me about, he forgot how to say the word header. He said he kept saying headball, like Kofman. He kept saying headball, and he was like, how do you say it? And I was like, header? He was like, oh, yeah, header. And so, yeah, Joe is a character, man. But he's a
it is
guy.
True, though, like, especially, I mean, yeah. Words that you don't use every day, too, like you start to forget them. Like my girlfriend will be like, what is this? Like, what word is this? And I'm like, oh man, I don't remember. Like, not that I don't remember, but I haven't said it in so long that it's not going to come to me at this point.
Yeah. It can be tough. Even my Spanish is, my family will be the first to tell you I speak Spanish to my family. And there'll be times where I'm like, I say something, they're like, what did you just say? And I'm like, dang, what did I just say? And it's not even a word in Spanish. I said it in like Portuguese or something. It's just like you get the languages mixed up. And oh my
days. Can you speak Portuguese now?
Like you said, when you don't use it, you lose it. So
yeah.
I still have some people in my life that I speak Portuguese with, but you know, not so often anymore. So I would say I can get by in Portugal for sure.
So then talking about national teams, representing the U.S. national team, how was that going or growing up in the U.S. camps, a few of the youth camps you were at? And what about the first team? How is it looking for the future?
You know, I wouldn't say I'm like necessarily thinking about the first team, not even in a bad way. But I kind of, you know, it's kind of something that even with the 23s, which is, you know, who I'm with now, you know, I was with the 20s before and, you know, the 16s before that. But it's kind of just something like, I remember when I was 15, when I got my first call up and I, you know, was waiting on the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and it wouldn't come. And so I just remember like it's one of those things where if you focus on something too much, it can affect you negatively. And so it was one of those things where, especially growing up, I was like, man, being at FC Dallas, you know, all your teammates are getting called up, you know, all of them. And I'm the star, like, go-getter, and I'm not getting called up. And so this is kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, what am I doing wrong? I hit a point where it's kind of just like, if I do my job, it will all come. And so that's kind of what happened here in Braunschweig. And I wasn't even in Spico, like, just in Spanish, just saying, like, picando piedra, where it's just like, brick by brick, you're just like doing your work, you're just like building the house. And kind of not even focused on what anything else or anyone else say, anything else that's going on. And that's kind of what was my mentality going into Braunschweig. And I wasn't even expecting, it was one of my goals, but I wasn't expecting to get called up by any means. And then when you get the info that, you know, one of the guys came out here to watch one of my games over St. Pauli, and you get good feedback and then you get called up, then it's definitely a good reward. But I, you know, it's not something I expect or necessarily think about. At the end of the day, the club is the one that pays you. So that's kind of where my loyalty lies.
And it's where you're at day in and day out. It's really the one that's making you a better player. Like you said, it's a tough balance though. And I mean, another balance for you is that you have eligibility for both the U.S. men's national team and the Mexican national team. I mean, how has that been kind of growing up to have these two homes or these two worlds, two federations that both have interest in you?
It's been, again, I would say, you know, although I have definitely heard interest in the Mexican Federation, I would say that's a good question for my brother. You know, I can try to pull some strings if you guys want to have him on, but, you know, I've been on, you know, kind of just in the background with him and it's something that, you know, he's had to think about it a lot, you know, and he's in the media about it and that kind of stuff. And even me, when I hear, you know, I have interest from US or Mexico, it's kind of just, I don't know. It's tough to think about, and it's not something. It's not a decision you want to make until you know, like, it's the right one. And so that's why I know, like, that's the approach my brother has taken, because he's still young. You know, he's just 20 years old. So, you know, you kind of just, because it's a decision that changes your life ultimately. So you got to kind of go based off opportunity and that kind of stuff. Even if, you know, you grew up supporting, you know, the U.S. or if you grew up supporting Mexico, it just kind of depends where the opportunities lie. At the end of the day, you want to play. And so that's kind of where my head is at. You know, you guys can ask him when you guys interview him, but
when we get you to pull those strings.
I'll do my best. But that's kind of where I'd say my head is at with that.
Yeah. So I read that you guys played, I think, one game together at Dallas? Have you guys ever played in an actual game together, registered game?
Official match we played together in North Texas.
In North Texas, okay, yeah, gotcha. Is there, I mean, obviously you guys have your own paths, your own things that you can't really necessarily worry about it, but do you guys ever talk about like that urge to join up at some point and to play, because you're both playing at such high levels?
I think the goal is to meet up and play in, you know, one of the first national teams and in a first league. But I think it'll definitely happen in our career. It has to. I mean, everybody knows this, but he's my best friend. You know, we talk every day. He just played today. I watch all his games, and I give him kind of – he trusts me enough to give him feedback, and he watches all my games, and I trust him enough to give me feedback. And it's good. It's great feedback because he was – you know, he's a defender. And so he gives me his view as a defender, and I can give him my view as a forward.
Right.
Or as an attacking player. So, yeah, I think it's just it's something that's definitely going to happen in the future. Hopefully. God willing.
Yeah, hopefully. Did you guys have a lot of battles growing up? I mean, was he always a defender? You were always attacker? Or was that dynamic always there?
Or he became a defender because you were an attacker.
I don't. So I'll show him. I show him enough love. So I'm gonna hate on him a little bit. But I always kind of tease him that.
We gotta keep him humble. We gotta keep him humble.
Yeah. So he's such an elite left back now that I can say this. But I always tell him he was never good enough as a winger. So that's why he's a left back. So but
he grew up playing. He said he moved back. Yeah.
He grew up playing winger. And ironically, as a kid, he wasn't fast by any means. He had like kind of one of those builds, like 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, 12 years old, even like right into the academy at like 13. Kind of one of those builds where he was never chubby, but it was kind of like, you know, he hadn't grown into his body yet.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't really operate as well on the wing. He has a great left foot, so that would help him. He would score some bangers, but he couldn't necessarily take his guy on 1v1 all the time. And so he was in the academy and he wasn't playing that much. And then one coach is pushing him to left back and this guy becomes a sensation. And out of nowhere, he becomes crazy fast and really good offensively. And so I was like, well, maybe he could play winger. Maybe he could. But no, I don't think he became full a defender circle. To defend me. Yeah, full circle. I don't think he became a defender to defend me, but we definitely do have our fair share of 1v1s when we both back home.
That's so awesome. Yeah, maybe one day you'll link up. That'd be awesome to watch, awesome to see.
I'd love to even just play against him, you know.
Yeah,
if yeah, I can sure. have a picture, if I can have a picture of me going one-on-one against him in an official match, you know, with like high stakes, something like that, man, I'd give anything for that. I'd frame that picture for sure.
I mean, you guys are, I mean, you're 22 and he's 20, right? So I mean, there is a lot of time left. Who knows where the journey
God willing, man, but we'll see.
Do you, I mean, in terms of like, do you ever daydream in terms of what like could become, like what level I can play at, or are you kind of, you're trying to keep yourself grounded on the moment, step by step?
I'm not going to lie and say I keep
myself. I mean, you kind of have to be though. You have to be a dreamer and then you have to bring it back sometimes.
100%. 100%. That's what I'm going to say. I'm not going to lie and say I'm grounded 100% of the time. Like I, especially knowing these guys that are playing at the high level, like I know them personally. And I've seen them play, and I've played with them, and I've played against them. Like, you know, I can do it. I can really do it. And football is just, you know, I think you create your own luck. But at the same time, it is, you know, there is a level of luck. You know, do you fit in this system? Are you going to shine in this system of this team that you transferred to? You know, is this coach going to play you in your position? Is he going to trust you? You know, that kind of thing. It all kind of has to add up. But I
or
think,
is he going to play you as a six?
Exactly.
And I'm just kidding,
Joe. Just kidding, Joe.
Exactly. But yeah, I think 100%. I can. I've dreamed about those. About how high I can go, and I don't think there's any limit.
Love that. And reflecting on the journey right now, what things would you say help you to get to this moment? So, in other words, why did Joan make it as a pro, and why is he still here and still nowhere near done?
What was the first one?
What helped you to get to this moment?
What helped me to get to this moment? I'd say sacrifice, probably the main thing. And not just my sacrifice, I attest it. You know, I won't tell them this because, you know, I butt heads with my dad a lot and even my mom because they're very firm in what they believe and that kind of thing. But, you know, they sacrificed a lot for me to be here and for my brother to be where he is. You know, we live an hour and 15 away from where we were training every day in Frisco with FC Dallas. And they picked me up early from school and they drove me there. And my dad mostly every day. And he'd work from the library while I was able to train every day. And then they trusted us enough when we were both in the academy to get us an apartment out in Frisco so that I wouldn't have to make the drive every day as a 16-year-old, as a new driver. And they put that money up, you know, to be able to pay rent for us to live in an apartment right across from the facility. So, 100% if it wasn't for them. So that's who I attest my success right now to. And I think, you know, I have bad games. I had a couple lately, but I think no matter what, I try to remind myself every day that's I do it for myself above all everything, and for God above everything else for me, but also for them, you know, the sacrifice. I know they love to see me succeed. And why, what's the second one?
Why are you still going? Why are you nowhere done, still higher heights to reach?
Why am I still going? I think it's because it's the human nature. I think even with you guys, you know, whether it's football or the podcast or whatever, you know, you always want more. I think if you don't always want more, then you may not be human, because I think that's just part of us. You know, you kind of, yeah. We kind of got that, you know, I think God instilled that in us even. And even sometimes, obviously, it's in a bad way, because maybe you always want more money and you're greedy almost at times. But I think it's, if you channel it in the right way, it's good. And that's why I think I am where I am, and I'm nowhere near done, because, you know, even if I'm playing for, you know, X team in the Champions League and playing the World Cup, you know, why not play in two World Cups? Why not score in three World Cups? You know, why not, you know, be a legend of this club? So I think there's always stuff to aim towards, for.
Yeah. Yeah. Always wanting more. Yeah. Couldn't have said it better. I mean, let's head into the fast feet round, some quick fire questions to end off. The first one, favorite player growing up?
Ronaldinho. Had his boots even.
Classic.
Favorite moment in football?
Probably I scored a derby goal last year in Spico versus a team called Awa. Celebrating in front of their fans. That was crazy.
Oh, I've seen the video.
Got a yellow card for that too, which I don't, what is that? What is that rule?
It's a big derby. It's a, they, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, but I don't see why it's, yeah. Should be a yellow. It's part of the game.
Provocative, I guess. I don't know.
Definitely is, but I just disagree with the card.
That one or my first second league goal, I'd say. One of those two.
What about most difficult moment in football?
Easily, the first time I didn't make a match day squad in with Porto B, easily.
Best advice you ever received?
Dude, I have such noble like parents and people around me. I feel like I'm always getting advice. But my mom says something that always sticks with me. And it's it translates probably worse in English because she said it in Spanish. But don't step on people on your way up, because you'll find them again on your way back down.
Wow. The humble, it comes back to the humbleness.
That's profound.
Yeah. Yeah. What about best player you ever played with and best player you ever played against?
Play with, I already mentioned him. Probably Vitinha and Fabio Vieira. Probably Vitinha, though. I played with them a couple times in youth league. And against? Does training count? I don't know. Does training count?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. An answer is an answer, yeah.
Yeah, I played against them in training a couple of times. But I'd say Luis Diaz, probably.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Crazy.
If you weren't a footballer, what would you be?
So my Rodstrike asked me this question. I said journalist. I'll probably stick by that. I love sports journalism, probably.
I mean, you're in it already.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So fair enough. Yeah. Favorite book, and if you're not a reader, favorite podcast.
I am a reader. I say growing up, probably something like, I love like the Great Gods and the Percy Jackson series, but now I really more self-help. So I say Think Like a Monk by Jay Shetty. It's really good. I recommend it.
Yeah, very nice.
Favorite podcast, Chump Chat or Footwork Podcast. Probably
one of those. Chump Chat, there you go.
I'm actually not a big podcast listener, but Jay Shetty actually also has a podcast that I like. I forgot what it's called, but yeah.
Any quote or mantra that you live by?
This is a tough one. I feel there's like, on a certain day, you have like a really good quote that comes to your mind, but at the moment,
yeah.
I say mantra. It's cliche, but everything happens for a reason, 100%. Mm. Firm believer in that, you know, even the bad things. I think everything has like a bigger reason and meaning behind it. So everything happens for a reason. And quote, I wouldn't say I live by this. I try to live by it. But in The Last Dance, Michael Jordan says, he says something like, why would I worry about a shot I haven't taken yet? And I think it's perfect for like making sure to not really be too much in your head and just kind of don't focus on the future of as an athlete. Just do your own thing.
Just play. Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Love that. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on. This was a joy for us. We can't wait to see the heights. Like you said, always wanted more. I can't imagine where it's going to go to, and I can't wait for part two. Part two will be in person, I'm sure. A nice footwear podcast, chum chat.
Anytime. Just let me know. You guys are always welcome here. So just let me know when you guys are close by and swing through.
Same here. If you're ever in Hamburg in the north, let us know.
Yes, let us know. Grab
some.
I will, 100%.
All the best, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
So another guest, another great conversation. Really cool to see also a younger American playing in Germany, like working his way up in Germany, but at a higher level than we are.
Yeah,
it's really cool to see the similarities and differences too. Like obviously the levels are much higher, but it's a lot of the same things that like typical German football and what they coach and the coaching of it and all that. It like feeds down basically.
It does. So
obviously
sure, yeah.
The levels of everything is different. But it's really interesting to hear, basically his experience at Zwickau and Braunschweig. It's a lot of similar things that we've gone through or that we've gotten from coaches here, at least in Germany. So it's definitely part of the football culture here, how they like to play the game.
Yeah. No, 100%. And I think his story is really cool, and it's like he's still so young, still so far to go. But he definitely has a refreshing take, and I think some of those things that happened to him early on in his career, kind of getting that initial hype, like he would be the next guy at Porto, like he said, and then kind of having those low moments where he wasn't even called into the squad, and then it didn't seem like it would happen there after, he spent the second year there. That we kind of talk about that, having those obstacles that you have to face even earlier in your career can be quite helpful. And he saw it when a lot of people see this name Porto and then they see Zwickau, which is a third division team, which I would say probably most Americans haven't heard of that club. Obviously it's a massive club and it's has such a history and then everyone in Germany would know it and it's a professional club, but a lot of people in America wouldn't know it. So they hear this Porto and they hear this Zwickau and they think, oh, he's taking a step backwards, but he had the self-belief and he could see it farther than just that initial reaction of everyone else, that this is what needs to happen and this is going to help me with my development. And then I think first year he scored 6 goals, second year scored 6 goals again or something like that, or 9, I can't remember what it was. But step by step, and now he's in the second league. And I'm sure, like he said a couple times, he'd wish he'd be scoring a couple more goals, but he's just getting better and better. And the goals will come, and we'll see where the next steps are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the whole Porto thing, he looks back at it now. Obviously, it was a great thing that happened. At the time, it wasn't. But looking back at it, it was kind of great to basically force his hand to make the move to Germany or to go elsewhere. He just wound up in Zwickau through Joe, the American Joe Enochs, the head coach. And then he took his chance when he got it. So it's like football, you never know where you're going to wind up. And he was ready for the opportunity when it came. Took it, made a jump up at the second Bundesliga, and we'll see.
Yeah, it works in mysterious ways right now. Yeah, 100%. It's cool. I mean, I love talking the tactical things. We did a little bit outside of the recording too. I mean, there's a lot there, like he's 22 and it feels like kind of, we talked to a guy who is maybe 29 and has been in Germany or been in Europe for a while, he wants to test himself against the best. And he feels that I liked, especially in the beginning too, I kind of liked one, there was like the time when he basically says he tries not to overthink it. And I think that's such a huge thing too, is you can analyze everything down to, oh, I should kick it this way when the keeper does this. But it comes from the self-belief that in that moment, you're going to be calm and going to be able to perform. And I think we tend to overthink it a lot, especially as athletes. We tend to overanalyze, overlook at the statistics, everything. When in the innate, like, we know how we should play. Especially if you've been playing at this level, you know those things. And doing the opposite can be more beneficial, just forgetting about it. just, you know.
Yeah, totally, exactly. I mean, like you said too, he's 22 and he's played almost 100 games in Germany already.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I think actually at this very moment, 99, obviously official matches, but that's
really cool.
That's impressive. It's great. And yeah, I hope he just continues to do it.
Follow them along too. That match will probably be on ESPN, the one that will just pass. They'll play Hansa Rostock on Friday, which sometimes we'll stream on ESPN for our American listeners. But yeah, keep up to date with them because it's a cool system how they play. It's cool how they play the two strikers. And, you know, he is very dynamic and it's a fun watch. They're a fun team. And I just hope that they stay up. And I'm sure they're doing everything they can and we'll be rooting for them. And we'll see where the path takes us or takes him. I mean, us too. But yeah. I would love to have the when we get the footwork studio that at some point, when we have all these guys on, we'll have the chum chat. And you guys exactly. can, they haven't come out with some episodes in a while. As he said, like off camera, the professional athletes running a podcast, it's tough. Sean and I don't have as many things that we have to do as those guys. And so we completely understand scheduling everything, but listen to their episodes because they're great and they have some great guests on. And yeah, hopefully we'll see more of them in the future.
Yes.
For us, housekeeping.
Sean's favorite word, housekeeping.
Layover hoodies, new YouTube videos scheduled to come out and some to be filmed. All that free support and yeah, more guests. I mean, what a guest we had on today, and we'll see who's next.
Yeah, I think that's it. So until next time,
keep moving forward,
keep learning,
and make your own path.
Footwork is sponsored by ourselves and great companies such as Kong Fitness. But we love to partner with new brands to make their own paths, so get in touch if you must.
Footwork.club, the official footwork website, is now live, so make sure you go join the club and check out all the new content and all the new features. Find us on YouTube at Footwork Podcast. You better like and subscribe while you're there. If not,
I don't know what to tell you.
Find us on Instagram at Footwork_podcast. Great time there. Twitter at Footwork Podcast. TikTok at Footwork Podcast, where we like to post dance videos. Those are great, but more importantly, amazing content for any dream chasers out there. Plug pass. Tell your friends, your enemies, your mother, your brother, your sister, your pastor. It doesn't matter who. Tell the mailman, your dog, anybody that can listen.
Like, subscribe, review, because all of that helps while you're there. We'll take whatever we can get to join the club.
Join the club. He messed me up. I mean, he can just mash it together, so it's fine.